Lisa, sweetheart. There's a Jesse on the phone.
Mommy, why can't Jesse wake up like everybody else?
Driver, that was my stop!
He's just having a bad
dream. We need you, Jesse. We got special work to do here, you and me. You've got the body. I've got the brain.
Something is trying to get inside my body. And you want to sleep with me.
There's a Jesse on the phone.
Jesse, fight him!
I can't!
You can! Fight him! You are not afraid of him. He doesn't even exist.
No!
Sure, you got a stick up his ass today. Schneider's always got a stick up his ass.
Hello, Dirtball.
Schneider got wasted last night. He must have been working late. Some maniac came in and sliced him up like a kielbasa.
I'm afraid to go to sleep. I'm afraid to stay awake. He comes to me at night, tearing at my nightgown with his steel claws.
There's a Jesse on the phone.
Am I going crazy or is this bus going too fast?
Driver! Driver, stop!
Jesse, just sit down. It's okay. It's all over.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it is. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, 121 episode, that is. And this time we're going back to Elm Street for perhaps the what's been described as the gayest slasher or perhaps horror movie of all time. So this one was chosen by our resident homo, Eric. Wasn't it, Eric? How are you doing?
Wake up, little girl.
Yes, it was chosen by me.
It was. You've been looking forward to this one for a long time, haven't you?
Oh, I have, yeah. Yes, no secret. It's one of my favourite movies of all time.
Excellent. So how are you doing anyway, apart from that?
Most excellent.
Okay, yes. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. And Nathan,
well, I had a work's night out, and I didn't drink one drop of alcohol. It was water all night, so I'm feeling fresh and alert.
That is very curious. How did you manage that, or were you just kind of just off the sauce?
It was very much. I had to use a lot of self control because we've got a big day tomorrow morning. We're recording an audio commentary, so I didn't want to have one of my sort of famous 3-day hangovers.
Okay.
So,
because your work do sometimes are kind of go down in a legendary, aren't they, for destruction and?
Well, yeah.
So do you think
broken Christmas trees?
Yeah.
And bicycles on boardroom tables and things like that. Yeah. Yes.
So do you think some of your colleagues might have a sore head?
Is this rude?
What?
Are you being rude?
No, a sore head as in a hangover.
Well, yes, because a lot of them were out till 4 in the morning and then had to get up for work at 7. So.
Ouch. Okay, right. Yeah. Right, well, thank you, Eric. How's your head, Nathan?
Not great. I'm still suffering from allergies, seasonal allergies.
Is it supposed to be getting, well, here anyway, it's supposed to be getting worse because the weather's heating up. But
they said that Chattanooga is one of the top 5 worst cities to live in if you have seasonal allergies. So I think I need to move.
Ouch. Okay. Do you take anything for them?
Yeah. I had to get a prescription. Because for over-the-counter meds, I had to get a prescription because apparently people use this stuff to make meth.
Well, there you go. That's Breaking Bad in Tennessee. But obviously you wouldn't do that.
No, of course
not. No, I don't know how to make it.
Is that the only reason?
Yeah, I just am too lazy to learn.
Okay.
Do you not put it in a baking dish at 170 fan for 30 minutes?
With some pink dye?
That's all you got to do?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you go. Well, instructional as ever.
I like to serve it with a nice side salad.
Well, that sounds delicious, Eric. Thank you for your clean living podcast. Joseph, are you clean living at the moment?
Yes, I am. And you are all my children now.
Ah, indeed.
Daddy. Indeed.
Yes, well, it's going to be interesting to talk about this sequel because it's one that's been on the cards for a long, long time. And as Long-time listeners know we are kind of having a little break from listener picks, although we will be returning to them shortly. So I think it's going to be a good one to do. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. So, Joseph, have you seen anything of note since last show?
Of note, the only thing I've watched of note would be Tales from the Crypt reruns, but I won't really go into those. I've just been kind of on a marathon with that. But of non-note, I watched a couple of movies. I watched Holidays, which is the anthology, the new anthology featuring a few name and non-name directors like Kevin Smith and a couple other people I can't really remember off the top of my head. But it's got a great central idea, basically little short segments based around particular holidays like Christmas, New Year's Eve, Father's Day, etc. The first segment dedicated to Valentine's Day is quite good, and the Father's Day segment is pretty, actually really well done until the kind of crappy ending, but the rest of it's just terrible. And not to get into too heavy of spoilers or anything, but the Halloween episode directed by Kevin Smith of, I guess, Clerks fame, is probably one of the worst anthology segments I've ever seen in any film. It basically has nothing to do with Halloween except for one character mentions that it's Halloween. It's just very juvenile, and the whole time I was watching, I'm like, how did this get, you know, greenlit into a horror anthology about Holidays? So it was just a big disappointment. So have any of you seen it?
I've not seen it. I imagine it got greenlit because it got Kevin Smith's name attached to it.
I think they just wanted to sell this this film, so they put him on there, but it was terrible. The other two, those two segments like Father's Day and Valentine's Day, they deserve a better film. The rest of it's just, I could barely even remember what happened. It was just terrible.
Okay.
But I also watched what's it called? The Invitation. Mm. It's basically about a bunch of people who go to this house up in the California hills. I think it's California. I can't remember, but I think the central premise is that, you know, they go to this house and basically all hell breaks loose. I think that's supposed to be the premise, but the majority of the film is just a bunch of hipsters sitting around talking about just mundane atrocities on the human psyche, and it just drags on and on and on and on. And these are people that, if I had to spend 2 minutes with them, let alone a whole night, I'd probably claw my own eyes out. I don't even really know what the movie is technically about or what really happened, because it's that forgettable. It's just the people and the characters in the film are so bland and dull and uninteresting. By the time you get to the, admittedly neat conclusion, it's just all for nothing because you don't really care about anybody. I mean, that's really all I can say about it without, you know, spoiling what happens, because honestly, I don't really remember what else happens other than them going to a house and people acting like a bunch of Looney Tunes near the end and talking a lot. So there you go. Anyone seen that?
No, but I know there's quite a lot of buzz about it, isn't there?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, it just didn't work for me. Maybe it worked for other people, but that's it.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it for this week.
Cool. Okay. Eric, how about you?
Well, interestingly that Joseph mentions Tales from the Crypt, because I've been watching Tales from the Dark Side, because I bought the... What's the gasp for?
I love Tales from the Dark
really?
Side.
Really? Because, don't think I ever watched it back in the 80s. So it was... I bought season one on DVD. It was going cheap in HMV. Now, I found it kind of disappointing, to be honest. It's a George Romero created anthology series, much like Twilight Zone, Tales from the Crypt, standalone episodes, 20 minutes each.
Eric, I just want to stop you for just a quick second and just go,
what, that I'm disappointed by it?
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've watched the first maybe 15 episodes now at this stage. And the majority of them are just incredibly weak, I find. And the scripts are thin. The production values are really poor. The pilot episode is called Trick or Treat, and it was directed by George Romero himself. And it's probably the worst one of the bunch. It's just nothing. I mean, they're all supposed to have these dramatic twists that aren't really dramatic at all. Now, some of them are okay, and they have a kind of a quirky 80s charm, but I'm just finding them painfully dull, to be honest. Now, this is season one. I don't know if things pick up.
In its defense, it gets a lot better towards the middle of run of the show. Mm. But I think maybe nostalgia tinges it for me, but I really love the intro and outro to the show.
Yeah, it's very low budget 80s intro to the show. I'm a big fan of like the Twilight Zone revival of the mid 80s, and watching them back, I can see like the flaws, but I still have a love for them. So maybe if I'd had seen Tales from the Dark Side back in the day, maybe I'd have more affection. And it's fun. It's seeing people like Justine Bateman and Christian Slater's in an episode, and you get to see all these what became familiar faces, I suppose.
So I'm assuming you have. The intro and outro. Yeah. Nathan, you sound like you're in like some kind of like tunnel or something.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling well.
But are you close?
You sound like you're under a blanket in a car going in a tunnel.
Yeah. You sound like you're muffled. About 40 miles away from a microphone. It sounds like.
Yeah.
You sound like Carol Ann.
Right. Yeah. Like, go into the light.
Hold on, it's probably my heater. Now you're gonna make me be in the cold because of this.
Whoa! Oh
my goodness.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Eric,
what was the problem? Anyway, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I think he's trying to stay warm. Sorry, Nathan.
It was cold in here. They keep it very cold in this office.
Yeah. But Eric, I'm assuming you have not got to the Seasons of Belief episode yet, have you?
Don't think so, no.
With the Grither?
No, definitely not.
Oh, that's the best Tales from the Dark Side episode of all time. It's awesome.
Is it inside the closet?
Oh, I've seen Inside the Closet, yeah. That was quite good, actually, Inside the Closet.
Sorry, wrong number, Nathan?
I think it's Sorry, Right Number.
Yeah, that one's excellent as well.
Yeah, that one's really good, too. It's not really scary. Inside the Closet
I did like, I have to say, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I actually saw any of those, to be honest. I'm trying to think, because I was getting mixed up with Tales from the Crypt, which was is that the Robert Zemeckis one, wasn't it?
More
higher budget.
Yeah, because these ones are like literally one set and very few special effects. Now, In the Closet does have a... In the Closet, what a name of a show to be discussing on Freddy's Revenge episode, but... That does have some. It has some creature effects in it, but majority of them don't. Like I was watching one yesterday about a sentient answering machine, which is a good idea, but it has no special effects whatsoever, and it's set in one room basically.
Mm.
Some of them work because of their weirdness. The one episode I think it's from the first season is with the guy from Commando, where he's a graphic designer, and he slowly finds himself disappearing from reality.
Yes. Yeah,
that was a good one. I liked that one. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, there's some good moments, but I've just felt a sense of disappointment. I was expecting something more Twilight Zone-y from them, and the budgets are sort of maybe a millionth of what Twilight Zone had. So,
yeah, if you do end up going through more of the series later on, you'll find there's a lot better episodes.
Okay, well, I might persevere then, because it is dirt cheap, the DVDs. Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
But that's all I've been watching horror-wise, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you, Eric. Nathan, how about you?
I watched Intruders, the new movie about the woman who's agoraphobic, and these three guys break into her house to steal money from her. It was okay. I don't know. I just kind of felt meh during the whole thing. Like, it's been done before, and to me it's been done, I guess, better in that it's been done more, like, frightening. Or, you know, tense. Like, I didn't really find anything in the movie to be particularly tense. It almost felt to me like just a very, I don't know, ho-hum experience, unfortunately.
Okay.
And there's a twist in it, but it's just kind of ridiculous to me, I guess.
Who's in it? I haven't heard of that one.
Nobody I recognize, but okay. I can look it up.
No, don't worry. If it's not
Rory,
anyone.
Rory Culkin is in it.
What?
Yeah, the Culkin brothers in okay. it. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. See the one from Scream 4?
Yes, he was in Scream 4, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's not like a horrible film. I mean, it's got, you know, like a 5.6 on the IMDb. I mean, I would probably give it a 5 out of 10. It's just, I don't know, like, it's just not bad enough to be entertaining, like so bad it's good. But it just wasn't good enough to be, like, a great film. It just sort of falls in the middle for me.
Cool. Okay. Has anyone else seen that? Or
no.
No?
No.
No, well, fair enough. Well, thank you, Nathan. I've been catching up again or revisiting.
I wasn't finished.
Oh, you were not finished?
Oh, Justin's in the bad books now.
Justin, you didn't ask me if I saw anything else. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Anyway.
Because I was excited to talk about this one.
I apologize for his rudeness, Nathan.
Yeah.
I know.
I don't really.
No, I saw The Green Room.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
And it was awesome. I loved it. I highly recommend it. We went to the theater.
News from the mainstream press as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but the basic premise is you have this punk rock band, and they're going to play at this kind of rundown club, and they accidentally witness a murder by these group of, like, Nazi skinheads have killed somebody. And the movie's basically like a survival story. Like, you know, the band members are locked in, you know, what they call the green room. And the skinheads outside are basically wanting to kill them, but do it, you know, they got to be careful about the way they do it because they want to try to make it look, you know, like the band was the one that came after them or something. So, I mean, it's really, you know, it's a good, like, tense film where both groups are kind of like fighting each other. So very much recommended.
Cool. Okay. Again, that's another one that's getting some buzz, isn't it?
It is, definitely. Yeah. It opens here next Friday. So.
Cool. Okay. Has anyone else seen it?
I was going to go see it this weekend, but I got sidetracked. I am looking forward to it. Patrick Stewart plays a good bad guy when he does play a bad guy. Yeah.
I love Patrick Stewart. I like him in American Dad.
Okay. Cool.
This is Patrick Stewart. Are you enjoying the program so far?
That's your impression of Justin.
Yes. No, actually, the Aussie is my Justin. Good night, Mike.
Ned Ingham. Oh, it was Alan Dale's birthday yesterday.
Oh, yes.
And guess what age he was? 69.
Well, there you go.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And Justin just had a birthday.
I did.
He did. And he had a 69. No, hang on, wait.
Did you turn 69?
I did not turn 69, no. No, a little bit younger than that.
Okay.
And Joseph has a birthday.
Nathan, did you really think I turned 69?
Well, Justin, you're one of those people that looks a lot younger than what your age is.
Yeah.
So I'm always shocked at what your age is. Because I actually thought that Justin was in his 30s, but I don't think you are.
No, I'm not in my 30s.
He's definitely not in his 30s.
No.
I think I look older than Justin does. And that's sad.
That's from all that hard drinking you do, Nathan.
I don't drink.
Well, that's the problem.
It's kind of ironic.
Yeah, that's what the problem is.
I know. Justin drinks. I should be doing that, right?
You need to. You've heard of the term getting pickled?
Yes.
Pickled.
I think it means something different over here than it does in the United Kingdom.
What does it mean over there, then?
Getting rogered.
Oh. Okay. Well, that keeps you young as well.
Yeah.
Apparently.
So well, Alan I mean, Dale. Getting pissed means something different in, you know, the UK than it does here.
It is, yeah. Getting pissed, but you say that as well, don't you, in the States now?
Usually say getting like a lot of people say pissed drunk, but usually if you say somebody's pissed, it means they're angry.
They're angry, yeah. Yes, yeah. Well, we say pissed off here as well, so that means someone's angry.
Stop Alan bold Dale. Words. You're dragging down the tone of the podcast.
Yes, I do apologize.
Did you know Alan Dale was in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, by the way?
Is he?
Who did he play?
Freddy Krueger.
The butchery guy.
Yeah.
Exploding. He does a great Robert Englund impersonation.
Yes, he does.
Well, of course, he was in the Slash movie.
Wake up, Alan Dale.
What the fuck?
If you do want to see Alan Dale in a slasher movie, go back to episode whatever it was of Houseboat Horror. Yeah. I'm sure he wants to forget
78.
That. 78.
78.
Okay, yes. Right. Well, thank you. Before I go on, I just want to double-check there's nothing else Nathan has watched.
Before he gives out to you again.
Yeah.
I know, before
sensitive.
I watched Chopping Mall, but... You know, I love that movie. There's not a whole lot I could say about it except it's amazingly fantastic.
Isn't that coming out on Blu-ray soon?
Yes, it is.
Isn't it? Yeah, so that'll
be interesting. Who's bringing it out?
Scream Factory, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, awesome.
I think so. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay. Well, definitely one to pick up. So, well, thank you, Nathan. And just making sure you won't throw any more shade my way.
No tea, no shade.
Exactly. Okay, well, carrying on. I've not watched anything new. Well, apart from actually, I had a day off because I was working last weekend, earlier this week, and I was looking on Netflix to see what kind of shit was on there. And of course, there's always quite a lot. And I ended up watching. I wanted something that I could watch that I could work to, you know, the kind of film that you don't have to pay much attention to. And I ended up watching Navy SEALs: The Battle of New Orleans, or something along those lines, with Michael Dudikoff.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
but it was Michael Dudikoff.
But it was the reason I chose it was because it was Navy SEALs versus zombies in New Orleans.
Oh.
And
is it not a sequel? I thought it was a sequel to Navy SEALs, like the Charlie Sheen movie or whoever was in it.
No, well, I don't. No. It's obviously some kind of franchise, but Michael Dudikoff's in it. But he doesn't do anything apart from stand around looking grumpy in a control room, and it's really rubbish. You know, it's very very dull. But it's not dull. It's got loads of action, but it's kind of exactly what you imagine it would be. But it passed the time, so that was okay. I've also been watching Fear the Walking Dead, which I'm quite enjoying actually. I doubt any of you are watching it, are you?
No.
No,
I remember I finally got caught up with Bates Motel. Mm. I'm actually caught up finally to where they are now, like airing on TV. And I have to say, I really, really like this show a lot. Just an aside there, so sorry.
Okay, no worries. It's something I'm going to sort of catch up with. But the thing that was interesting, and again tying into this episode, is that Fear the Walking Dead is kind of taking a turn to the gay side. So, if I won't say what? More, but
what? There's a zombie on the phone.
Is it better than the actual Walking Dead? Because I find that show just incredibly boring.
I would say it's different, but it's because it's starting. It's kind of as society's collapsing, although most of that's kind of happened, and most of this is them trying to get to Mexico. It's a bit more exciting, I think, than the main show, in so much. And also you've got new characters, and I think the problem with the main show is that they've set up the characters. They're not going to kill any of them, probably, the main characters. Whereas with this one, you have that kind of sense of danger. You don't really know what's going to happen or who's going to survive. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. I mean, it is just more zombie nonsense, but it's quite good fun. But the only other two things I watched, sort of been introducing some friends to Italian horror, we watched Phenomena, the Dario Argento movie, which I think we're down to cover at some point, aren't we?
Yes.
Maybe. I don't know. One of those pesky Alisham brothers is like trying to change their picks around now, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I won't say too much, but it's kind of batshit crazy Argento. Argento at his finest when he goes nutsoid, you know, with chimp with a cutthroat razor and, or you know, bugs, flying bugs and... you know,
telekinetic flies.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's great. I love the film. It's really good fun. Argento is nuttiest. And of course, Argento had a hand in Lamberto Bava's Demons, which from 1985.
Love this.
Which is fantastic, set in the cinema with obviously the demons coming to life, set in Berlin, I think it was. So we got some friends coming around next Friday to watch the sequel, Demons 2, which has the fantastic.
Even awesome. It's even better.
Yeah.
It's got what's the girl's name? Who's like Inga?
Yes, at the birthday party.
Oh, Sally. Is it Sally?
Sally. Yeah. Sally. Yeah.
So I'm not the
only. They just go back and forth.
I told you.
So I'm not the only one who thinks Demons 2 is better than the first.
No, you're not. I love Demons 2. No,
but Demons 2 has Sally, and Sally's like the best thing ever.
Okay.
I wouldn't necessarily say that I prefer Demons 2. I'd like both of them equally, I think. But Demons 2...
They're pretty much the same movie. Yeah.
They are. But Demons 2 is sillier, isn't it, I think? And more fun.
But you're saying something, because Demons 1 is pretty darn silly itself.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also got a great soundtrack, isn't it, Demons 2?
Yeah.
That's a bunch of shit, baby.
I think I like Demons 2 because it... it takes place like in a larger area, like this whole skyscraper building is being attacked, and Bobby Rhodes as the guy like running the gym is hysterical.
Yeah,
I love Bobby Rhodes.
Yeah, me too. He's awesome in both movies,
just like in the damn movie.
It's either Demons 1 or 2, where one character, a woman in Lycra, it's probably Demons 2, then runs up and starts crying and going, "I want to go home. I don't want the demons to get me."
Yeah, that's
because that's something you would say. Yeah,
I don't want the demons to get me.
Another, nobody wants the demons to get them.
Exactly. Another on a similar theme. I also watched 88 Films release Zombie 3, the Lucio Fulci Bruno Mattei mashup. Lucio Fulci's last film, and I had it on a bootleg.
Not his last film.
Wasn't it his last film? I thought he died while making it.
No. He was just ill, which is why they had to get Bruno Mattei, because he went on to do another few films. He did, like, Voices from Beyond.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one.
What, Voices
from Beyond? He died in 1996. Right. He died in 1996.
So. Okay, well, there you go. But are you saying you haven't seen Demons 3, or, Zombie 3, or Voices from Beyond, Nathan?
I don't think I've seen Zombie 3, no.
Oh, it's awesome.
It is really good, because it's got, like...
Would I like it?
Well, yes, you of all people will love it.
Yeah, because I'll tell you...
anyone out there is guaranteed to like it, it's you, Nathan.
It's got a scene where somebody opens a fridge and a zombie head flies out and bites them on the neck.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I have to see it.
And it's got a scene where a zombie is attacking a woman with a machete, but the scene is speeded up to give it more pace, but it looks like an old silent movie then.
Yeah.
Is it the one with the group of scientists?
Well, they've all got... That's Zombie Creeping Flesh as well, isn't it? Which is the one, the Mexican one, Nightmare City. That's got a group of scientists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I think
quite a lot of them got scientists. But this one, it's also got a zombie DJ.
Yes, zombie DJ.
So if you'd remember the zombie DJ, so you'd know if you've seen that one. It's set in the Philippines. But it's got like an all-Italian, the main cast is all-Italian. But I think it's set in the Philippines. Well, it's set somewhere around there anyway, that kind of part of the world. But
they're not disguising it very well if it's not set in the Philippines.
No. They have spent many hundreds of millions of dollars making it at Rome look like the Philippines. But I think they've just gone to the Philippines, didn't they, for tax relief. But but Nathan, you would love that. So
saying right now, I was looking at the IMDb for it, and I read one of the quotes on the main page, and I'm like, oh, I have to see it. Because it's got some character named Glenn saying, "I'm feeling better, Patricia, but I'm thirsty for your blood." Like, I gotta see that.
It's really good.
You see, the guy's got a pregnant woman as well who, we won't spoil it anyway. Watch it. That's all recently seen. So I kind of guess we're going to head on now to...
It wasn't done, Justin.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I just loved the way he said it.
Was I rude, Justin? Was I rude to you? I apologize.
I think the term is passive-aggressive.
Oh, I get accused of being that all the time.
Do you?
My apologies. To anybody I'm passive-aggressive to, I apologize. It's my natural personality. I don't intend it.
No, I know. I know you're a sweetheart, really. So, anyway, fuck you. Okay. Well, sorry. Did that come out loud? Let's go on to the feature presentation, which is Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. And here is the trailer. And Eric will bring us onto Elm Street after this.
Someone is coming back to Elm Street. He is not friendly. He is not patient.
Get off of me!
And he is not a welcome visitor.
No! No! No!
But he has something terribly special for the new kid on the block.
It started to happen again.
Dad!
I'm in trouble. You've had some scary dreams, okay? Help!
Daddy can't help you now.
There's something inside him.
Ah!
Krueger is back on Elm Street.
Get out of here, Lisa!
Jesse, fight him!
Watch out for him. He'll be in your neighborhood soon. A Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 2.
You are all my children now.
Freddy's Revenge.
Five more years have passed and the children are sleeping peacefully on Elm Street. The demonic dream killer Freddy Krueger is just a fading memory. Nancy is gone, the nightmare is dead. Jesse Walsh is the new kid in town. His family have just moved into a new house. On Elm Street, the house. The dream can fade, but it will never go away, as Jesse is about to find out. So beware, because the thin membrane that separates nightmares from reality is about to be ripped apart. The man of your dreams is back. I used to have this on VHS, and that's the back blurb from the UK release back in the day. At the time, it was brought out. I remember, you know, renting it out and knowing that it was kind of regarded as one of the worst horror sequels ever. But my own, like, as far as I remember, I think I enjoyed it at the time. I can't be 100% sure. I can say with certainty that the gay subtext did completely bypass me watching the film back in the late 80s. And, you know, even to this day, it's the film itself rather than the subtext that provides the main source of entertainment in the film. The gay subtext does, however, provide an extra layer of entertainment now. But back in the day, I was much more a fan of parts 1 and 3. I owned both of them on VHS. I didn't own this one for some reason, but I used to watch 1 and 3 endlessly. And I know we discussed this when we covered Nightmare on Elm Street Part 1, that certainly myself and Justin have just watched it too many times, that I'm over familiar with Nightmare on Elm Street 1, that doesn't have the impact it once had, even though I can admit that it's a better film than Freddy's Revenge. But at this stage, 2016, I find Freddy's Revenge a far more rewatchable film than the original, just because of the overfamiliarity aspect. And the same with Dream Warriors. I suffered just because resources were limited. I had a small video collection back in the day, and just all the films I had were just watched endlessly on a loop. And this is some films suffered from it. But I could, going back to Freddy's Revenge, I can see why people viewed it as a disappointment at the time, because it does veer off in its own very wild directions and has very few similarities to the plot and structure of the original film. The script feels really rushed, which is probably the case because it was produced, shot, edited, and in cinemas within, I think, 11 months of the original. It feels like no thought has gone into the logic of the plotting, and certainly there's horror sequences in there that feel completely shoehorned in with no sense of how they fit into the plot. I mean, we're exploding parrots and dogs with human faces, things like that. But it's exactly this kind of potpourri, mishmash, non-conformist attitude that makes the film remain fresh for me. Beginning with Dream Warriors, which was, you know, part 3, they established a formula that they sort of kept with for the rest of the sequels, which is introduce maybe, you know, 7, 8, 9 teenagers who have one distinct personality trait and then kill them off in ironic ways, you know, relating to that trait. So you have the girl with the big hair who hates cockroaches. She gets turned into a cockroach. The guy who likes sculpting puppets is turned into a puppet. So they become very formulaic after this one, but this one has absolutely no formula to it, and that's probably why I love it so much. It's just haphazard, and you can never tell what's going to happen. And the opening sequence, I think, it's fantastic. I love the gaudy title sequence where A Nightmare on Elm Street is scratched onto the screen, and also just the idea of the school bus being driven out into the desert, the ground giving way, that it's to the point where it's balancing precariously on a precipice. And like the original movie, again, the characters are quite likable in it. Grady, who you think might be the school bully, but then it turns out to be a good friend, and also a Lamal fan, as we can tell from his bedroom wall, which makes him endearing to me personally. I think Mark Patton is an excellent actor. He's brilliant as Jesse. An unusual role, again, because he's not... he's not sort of the macho pretty boy that sort of Johnny Depp or... I'm trying to think of other macho pretty boys from the Nightmare on Elm Street series, but I can't think of any. But Johnny Depp, there we go. He's quite weedy, and we do get to see a lot of him in his underpants throughout the movie, which ties into the gay undercurrents, I suppose, we're going to discuss later. Or overcurrents, probably, as they should be called, because there's nothing terribly subtle about them. Also, I love the special effects in the film are spectacular, in my opinion, and they far outdo anything in the original film. I mean, some of them are a bit iffy, but the transformation sequence is excellent, and is up there with some of the effects from, I would say, American Werewolf in London or The Beast Within. I love the idea of the blades growing out of Jesse's fingers, and, you know, the face pushing through his chest. You know, again, to a modern audience, it might look a bit dated and cheesy, but I personally think they're terrific, those effects. There is one, the demonic cat in there, which is not exactly the work of Industrial Light and Magic, and it makes the demonic cat of The Uninvited look, you know, spectacular in comparison. And there's definitely a WTF factor to a lot of the film as well. I mean, Coach Schneider gets his buttocks whipped by an invisible towel merchant. I love the fact that the pool party, which makes the film feel very 1985, because everyone has huge hair. But I like the fact that they can't start the party until the parents switch the light out in their bedroom, as if that's going to switch off their hearing aids as well. You know, the film is just, it is all over the shop. It's all over the place. But that's probably why, you know, it's the flaws and quirks that keep the film fresh for me, and it's so non-formulaic. I just think it's part of its charm is unintentional, part of it is intentional, but, you know, between the two, the film is an absolute triumph for me, and I love it. And I love, we were discussing our favourite film artwork in a very early podcast, and I mentioned Freddy's Revenge was probably my number one, the Graham Humphreys UK poster. And I love the soundtrack by Christopher Young, with the sort of incorporating whale sounds and sounding quite surreal in places. I just there's so much to like about Freddy's Revenge, and I can watch it endlessly on a loop. It's probably my favourite Elm Street movie. I'd have to say along with the original, but as I said, original, too familiar with it. This one I can watch over and over and over and over. So I didn't get to see this in the cinema, but I do know one person who did, and that is you, Justin.
Yes, I did get to see it in the cinema, and I've said quite a few times before, so I won't labour the point, but I saw the original with friends when I was about 15, 16, and we went to see the sequel, and I think we'd say, it's fair to say, we're quite disappointed in the sequel. I think we thought it was quite funny, and but it wasn't a patch on the original. And to this day, although I do love the sequel, and I've grown to appreciate it a lot more for all of its cheesy charms, its undercurrents, and all that kind of stuff, I do wonder what we could have got if we'd had a sequel that was like the Friday 13th Part 2 to the original Friday 13th, which was made it straight and kept Freddy as a scary boogeyman rather than turning him into a wisecracking buffoon, which is what obviously became further and further throughout the series. Having said that, I think it works really, really well. I get a kick out of it. I can't believe that at the time they didn't realise that about the gay subtext. Talk a bit more about Mark Patton and his reaction to all of that. But certainly things like the exploding parakeets, you know, with around Clu Gallagher, his father, and his mother. Is it Tuesday World? I think it was. Is it Tuesday World who's played his mother? I can't remember anyway. But the whole exploding...
Let me have a look. It's, yeah.
The exploding parakeets, it's kind of... It takes it... It risks taking it from the kind of the sublime to the ridiculous, taking it beyond what is kind of not acceptable, but into direct parody, which is strange for a film that was coming off the back of what was relatively serious and dark film, The Nightmare on Elm Street. So, but having said that, there's an awful lot of fun within the film. I love the pool sequence. Although it was criticised at the time, and quite fairly so, for breaking the dream logic that Freddy is able to burst into the real world, whereas before he's been confined to killing teenagers in their dreams, whereas he suddenly has the power to actually come into the real world. And that kind of that playing loose with the logic is not certainly is not something that's strange or unusual in the slasher movie. I mean, the slasher movies are full of kind of plot holes and, you know, sort of mislogic here and there. But that whole thing and him standing up and saying, "You're all my children now," with the flames behind him, is such an iconic image. And it also has that kind of weird resonance as well. It's kind of, it has a threat threatening nature to it, which is missing in a lot of the rest of the film. It's difficult to remember. I mean, this is what, 31 years ago or 30 years ago with the scene at the cinema. So trying to remember how the audience would have reacted. But of course, I think there was a lot of laughter and a lot of, you know, cheering, and people got into swing of it. But of course, it wouldn't have looked so dated back then, obviously, because it would have looked very of the now. But I still get a kick out of that kind of the mid-80s look. And it has that sense of fun that a lot of the best kind of teen 80s movies had. Which I think is, you know, if you look, I haven't seen the remake of the original Nightmare on Elm Street. I just can't bring myself to watch it.
No, it's horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, but I wonder, there was talk about doing making a sequel to that, and I just wondered what that would be like, whether or not they would go down the very cheesy route. It would be interesting to see. But there's a lot of good stuff in this film. I love the opening scene with the school bus. You know, and that kind of surreal, the whole, you know, it's paving the way for all of the surreal nature of all of the kills and everything, but that kind of sort of Dante-esque kind of, or Hieronymus Bosch almost kind of landscape with the school bus balancing on those pillars as the desert falls away. You know, that kind of thing is very clever and very inventive. And of course, I don't think I got the gay subtext when I watched it originally. It just didn't translate. And I think, I wonder actually how quickly that all came out, for want of a better term. You know, when people started realizing whether or not that was at the time. But yeah, so that's my kind of my tuppence worth for Nightmare on Street 2 at the moment. So.
Nathan? Before I go to you, Nathan. Justin, were you saying Tuesday Weld you thought was the mother in the movie? Was it?
Yeah,
it's Hope Lang.
Oh, Hope Lang. That's right. I thought I got it wrong, but yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay.
Sorry, Nathan. Continue.
I very, very, very much love Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2.
Sorry, Nathan, I haven't finished.
Oh, Justin, how dare you? If I had a glass of cheap Chardonnay right now, I would throw it on you.
Wow, dynasty style.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
If I had a swimming pool, I'd toss you off into it.
Toss me off? Oh, my God. You're so rude.
Carry on.
No, I'm a big fan of the movie. I mean, like, you know, Eric was saying, the gay subtext was lost on me when I was a kid. You know, I didn't really see it for that. I just saw it as a horror film. You know, I like Mark Patton. You know, I think he did a really good job in the film. And I like, you know, as you were saying, Freddy Krueger's kind of kept more scary in this one, which I really liked. I love the party scene. To me, like, I feel like a lot of the film, to me, feels like a good build-up to this party scene. And I just love that this one guy at the party is trying to, like, talk Freddy down. You know, I don't remember exactly what he's saying. Something like, nobody's going to hurt you or all this. And I'm
just
thinking to myself,
tell us what you want. We're here to help you.
I'm like, no, you're about to get killed, dude. But no, I love the party scene in it. And it's funny because we were talking about Demons 2 earlier, and there's a big massacre at a party in Demons 2 as well. So, and, you know, I had a lot of fun with that sequence. I love the shot of Freddy with the fire behind him. And, you know, his arms are kind of like going back and forth, you know, with...
Sally's sleeves.
Very. I know, just like Sally's sleeves. See, there's a lot of similarities here. Even there one is. Girl in Demons 2 has big claw marks across her back. Looks like Freddy's claws. But, no, I mean, I feel like the ending to me is so cheesy and hysterical. And you guys know what I'm talking about, like the scene at the very end with the friend. Yes.
It's the ridiculous. Bus?
No, the bus when it bursts out of her chest. It's ridiculous. I love it. Let's see. The lead girl to me, in a way, Kim Myers. Is that her name, Kim Myers? I think it is. She resembles Meryl Streep to me.
Yes. Mm.
I think she really looks like Meryl Streep a lot. I'm like, you know, they should have played like, you know, sisters or something in a movie. I think
she even wears Meryl Streep's perfume Versatility, smell like Streep for cheap.
Nice. But I mean, there's not a whole lot I could say because I just think it's a really, really good movie. And, you know, obviously, you know, watching it now, there is a lot of gay subtext. I mean, like you were talking about the gym coach, you know, he's at a leather bar at one point and Jesse shows up there. The gym coach getting like snapped with the towel repeatedly. And as I watch it now, I'm like, this totally went over my head as a kid. But watching it now, I'm like, oh, I totally see exactly what everybody else was saying watching it now. And I wanted to also talk about what Justin had mentioned. I love the opening scene with the school bus on the – how'd you describe it? It's on, like, the big
– pillar of rock.
Pillar, yeah. Yeah, that's a good description. Pillar where it's, like, tilting back and forth. That's very inventive. And I thought that was just a great inventive way to open the film. It's funny to me that the film opens basically on a bus and ends on a bus. I wonder if there's some symbolism with that. I don't know.
Dream analysis and buses.
Yeah. But no, I mean, fantastic, fantastic movie. That's my two cents.
Well, okay. Well, let's hand over to Joseph. Joseph, is he inside you? Is he trying to get inside you?
He's trying to come out.
Jesse, it's just all the things you've had inside you recently, like the diary and the... Yeah. The glove, or something like that is the phrase she uses. It makes me laugh.
No, I actually did see this at the cinema with my older brother. I don't really remember the movie itself, but the one thing I do remember is we saw this at a place called Southgate 5, which has been closed for a long time now. And basically in the early to mid-80s, when they'd have a horror film, they'd decorate their lobby, you know, pertaining to that particular horror film. And I remember they had a coffin with Freddy, like a dummy, like a mannequin with a Freddy mask. And the foyer or the hallway going into the theater was lined with Freddy Krueger's glove. Like, they had a bunch of those gloves, so I always remember that. But I don't really remember the actual movie experience itself, because, I mean, God, was that 30-something years ago? Yeah. But, I mean, what can I say about Freddy's Revenge that kind of hasn't been regurgitated 1,000 times before? It's definitely a Reagan-era entry, probably as garish in body as its predecessor. But this one opts instead of just a dream demon coming after kids for revenge, it also opts to tell the morality tale of a young man struggling with his homosexuality and the pussy power that ramps up full throttle to save him from its nefarious clutches. I think Mark Patton's Jesse Walsh character, he wasn't sent to I guess you call it a pray the gay away camp, but he did have to contend with a slimy, hulking, bald man with a really big hat. I think it's this oddball kind of melange of sexual confusion and the spooky midnight sleepwalking that kind of makes it a pretty strange but a pretty powerful entry into the Elm Street saga, in my opinion. It goes over into the real world for a majority of the runtime, so in a way, it doesn't necessarily feel like a proper Elm Street film. It kind of feels more like a standard teen horror film with Freddy kind of shoehorned in to kind of rake in a profit. But I think it works despite that. I don't find much in the way of I guess you call it proper stellar characterization outside of the Jesse character. You know, I certainly think Mark Patton is very good here. And, you know, Grady is, you know, kind of an interesting best friend. And I do like the smaller, but kind of bombastic role from Clu Gulager as his father, constantly harping on Jesse to clean his room. And then Jesse, when he cleans his room, he does that ridiculous dance where he closes a drawer with his ass. I love that.
That's the best
scene.
Thing ever.
Yes. I don't know. I found everyone else was just kind of a set piece in Jesse's tale of sexual awakening. So I guess I could dock at some points for that, for not, you know, spending as much time on everyone else as it does on Jesse. But I guess that's kind of the point, because this is Jesse's film. But, you know, all in all, this is It's definitely an oddity, but I think it deserves a second viewing especially from those who kind of idolize Freddy as this wisecracking demigod of the 80s horror films, but they don't necessarily wish to see him tangled up in some kid's sexual malaise. I think they should actually give it a different another chance, because it's despite all that weird sexual subtext, it's quite good on its own. I don't think a film like this would actually work as well today. I mean, our society, you know, some southern states aside, is a little more open to the kind of to homosexuality and all that. So I think it's definitely a product of a time when, you know, such inner struggles were more taboo than they are now. But, overall, a big thumbs up from me. I really liked Freddy's Revenge, actually.
Cool. Thank you. Eric, do you want to say anything else about the film, or do you want to move us some feedback? Some background?
Well, no. But I mean, but just I just... Oh, there's the school bus going in the background.
Sorry, I live on a very busy street. Sorry.
I know, yeah. I was making notes about sort of the various sort of, quote, homoerotic elements, or the sort of gay elements of the film as it went along. I just recall them here on... there's Jesse's arse, which we see on a few occasions. Jesse in his underpants, sweaty, which we see on a few occasions as well. Rough and tumble between Grady and Jesse on the baseball diamond. No more chicks sign on his bedroom door. No out-of-town chicks, I should say, sorry. He has a game called Probe that's hidden in his wardrobe. I don't know what the game Probe involves, but I hope it's 18s rated. He has a candle melting beside his bed that looks like a knob. Did anyone spot that one?
Oh, Eric.
In One of the Nightmares?
No, I did not see that one.
Grady has a Lamal poster, as I mentioned before, in his bedroom, and a Power Station poster, and a Tina Turner poster. Now, Grady's not straight. Sorry.
Power Station. Something like it hot.
Yeah. The beer cans that explode at the pool party look like ejaculating cocks. No?
Carry on.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah, dialogue like, he's inside me and he wants to take me again. And this is the actual quote that Lisa says that I fumbled earlier. It's everything you've taken in, Jesse, like Schneider, the diary, the glove. It's like, how much room is there up there?
gerbil up there as well.
Yeah, probably like Richard Gere. And also that there's the when the kids... launched the music for the pool party, they put on this really, really, really trashy, high-energy music by Bobby Orlando from A Whisper to a Scream. I'm not familiar with Bobby Orlando's work, but it sounds very much like gay, high-energy music like Hazel Dean or Divine or one of those type of artists. So, there's lots going on in there, but this all went over my head until it was publicized in some magazine. I don't even know when that was. I mean, was it Justin, you were saying you're wondering when all that... came out, as it were. I don't remember when it was, but I think for a long time I watched Freddy's Revenge with absolutely no clue that was going on in the background. Well, and I'm wondering if how much of it was intentional or if it was unintentional.
I think once you start seeing things, you kind of you can't stop, can you? And there probably are things that were unintentional there that just in the context of another movie you wouldn't have noticed.
I was just going to say one of the gayest things about, and this is from the very start of the movie, is Jesse's scream, because he screams like an absolute girl, which isn't, you know, I don't mean to disrespect the guy, but his guys in horror films don't scream like that. I mean, I played it in the intro. If you were listening to the intro at the start of the podcast, you'll hear that.
Well, Mark Patton was given an honorary scream queen mantle from his peers,
and deservedly so.
Yeah,
but
do you know someone else who screams like a girl?
You?
No, I think we've long threatened this, but do you remember quite a few episodes ago we were talking about the famous Tickle Tape? Ticklegate?
No.
When I met with Eric in Manchester about 2 years ago, we videotaped Eric being tickled by his friends.
No!
I have a recording here of Eric being tickled, and here it is. So...
Can you take that side?
No, don't. No, no, Mark, you don't.
He's just coming up with
me. I know! Stop!
And there it was. Ticklegate.
Hate you.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
Oh, Eric.
I don't want to be a Jesse.
Well, you are Jesse. You are a Jesse, Eric. Inga, Eric. I think, but don't you think it's a bit rich of you to criticise Mark Patton's screaming skills when you did that in a bar full of people in Manchester?
Yes, okay. Me too.
There might be a little bit more. If you listen to the end of the show, I've got an extended version of that as well.
Oh, no.
And some talk about dildos, but...
What?
Yeah. Don't you remember hearing that?
No.
Well, you'll find out. Listen to the end of the show.
When was that? Was that recorded in Manchester as well?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So, okay. Anyway, listen to the end of the show for, you know, for a very... talking about, probe and other things and what's inside people, you'll find out. So find out the dirty secrets. It's like the National Enquirer, isn't it? Or some kind of trashy magazine. I can imagine what's on the cover. And what goes on behind closed doors of Eric's bedroom. But anyway, let's move on to some background. And talking of obviously Jesse being the main character, I didn't realise until I started doing some digging or reading up on this how much Mark Patton was upset by the movie. And because he was obviously gay in real life, but like many young actors and actresses. A point in case is it Colton Haynes, the guy from Arrow, the TV series, and Teen Wolf, has just come out publicly after many years of sort of denying that he's gay. And it's still quite a brave move even today for people to do that, because it probably will affect his career, because although Hollywood is full of gay people, it's still a very homophobic kind of town. As anyone who's worked there, not that I have, but people I've spoken to say it's still very homophobic. So, but I think Mark Patton kind of felt that it kind of destroyed his chances of getting roles. And of course, that's more about the homophobic nature of the film industry rather than him being gay. But I think he felt like he'd been had. And didn't it turn out the screenwriter, well, for want of a better term. Didn't it turn out the screenwriter denied for years and years and years that there was a gay subtext, and he'd written
he said that the only reason there was a gay subtext to the film is because of Mark Patton's performance in the lead role of Jesse, and that's what upset Mark Patton most, he said. This is David Chaskin, the screenwriter, but then in the Never Sleep Again documentary, he admits that he did intentionally put in the gay subtext. But I mean, I'm still not convinced that that a lot of it is intentional. I don't know. I just think...
I think some of it is, but I think some of it just is like chance, like it happenstance.
It just seems kind of it's not a highbrow movie, but it feels like a highbrow concept to be put into a movie sequel, a horror movie sequel. It's like, really?
It's also, I imagine that even with someone like New Line, they wouldn't have, if they'd come to them and said, look, we want to make a gay sequel to A Nightmare on Elm Street, your biggest moneymaker, that New Line would have said, no way. You know, even someone as kind of New Line involved, I think, with John Waters movies and stuff like that, but they would have probably not wanted to risk their money on something like that. I wouldn't have thought. So,
but they said, like, if you watch Never Sleep Again, the majority of the cast and crew had no idea of the subtext that was going on in the film.
Wasn't Jack Sholder, a director who, for listeners to the show, is most famous for being, and I think he's the editor on The Burning, and also directed Alone in the Dark. But he says he had no idea, didn't he? And if he was the director, so unless some of the set designers were in on it, and putting things like probe and phallic candles, which is very possible,
and Lamal posters.
Yeah. I mean, it's very possible, isn't it? But it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting. But Mark Patton, he's got is his book out yet, or is it?
I'm not sure. Yeah,
he's doing he did a fundraiser for a documentary called Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street. It's basically centered around the whole gay subtext and all that stuff.
So maybe it's a documentary rather than a book, but I know I came across, again, not a poor choice of words, but there's Jesse's journals. Have you seen those online, where he's written a fictional diary for Jesse?
Yeah.
If you search for those, Jesse's Journals, and then he does this kind of, but yeah, it's basically a fictional sort of diary exploring his character, as it were.
He, I think he lives somewhere in Central America or maybe Mexico. Yeah.
It's Oaxaca. Well, I've been to Oaxaca. It's down in South Mexico.
I think if I recall correctly, he basically owns an art shop where he sells handmade sculptures and little trinkets and gewgaws and things like that. We met him a couple of times at a couple of different conventions, and he had a bunch of that stuff for sale along with his Freddy merchandise. But he also had a lot of his art stuff for sale, so it was kind of interesting.
Is he a nice guy?
He's a terrific guy. Nice. I think there's a picture of me and him on his page somewhere, maybe.
Because do you remember, it's 4 years ago now, I went over to London to meet Adrienne King. She was doing an appearance. Shortly after that, maybe a couple of months after that, Kim Myers and Mark Patton came over for a similar event with Freddy's Revenge, but I didn't get to see it. But my friend David did get to hang out with them and actually had dinner with Kim Myers and Mark Patton. He said they were lovely.
Okay. Oh, that's nice. Did they
tickle Mark Patton?
No. to see if the screams were authentic from Freddy's Revenge. No, they didn't try that. I'll get you, Justin, for that.
Yes. Well,
maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow.
Well, see, Eric, you should have been taping Justin the whole time, so you could.
I think I will. You could have had some leverage
on him.
Yeah. Next time.
If only we'd got the audio of him singing "There's a Light That Never Goes Out."
So
we'd rip that audio while we had the chance.
When we actually all finally get together at some point in the next 30 years, I'm going to bring a camera just for that very fact alone.
Okay. Well, we shall look forward to
project
that.
I want the next 30 years.
It'll get confiscated by customers.
I want to get video footage of Justin dancing around in his bedroom and closing the drawer with his butt. And
I can imagine him doing that.
It's never going to happen. It will never happen, but...
Like there's a light that never goes out.
Yeah.
That will never happen again either.
Oh.
So more background. Who's got some more background for us? Nathan, how about you?
Let's see. The background that I have is Mark Patton is on Facebook.
Oh?
Yep. He's very nice to his fans. And... Nightmare on Elm Street 2
is Electric Boogaloo.
Mm-hmm. Is good.
Well, there we go. In-depth analysis. Well, I don't know if there's any point in asking that Joseph Yvant after listening to that thesis. Joseph, do you...
No, the only thing I had was basically just talking about my theater experience where they had that lobby all set up. It's just kind of personal anecdotes. I didn't really have much time, and I think this movie's that Never Sleep Again doc pretty much covers anything I could have found.
It does. So, it's a pretty darn good documentary. Justin, do you have any more stuff?
I imagine you've got quite a bit. So there's a couple of things that I found from Variety. Well, one thing was it's quite... dull, really, but it was saying that when the film came out, as we know, they kind of Nightmare on Elm Street was. I remember seeing a newspaper clipping back in 1984 or something when the film came out, and saying that it was the film that had given horror a much needed shot in the arm financially, because by 1984 it was kind of box office poison. But as we know, with the Elm Street films, they kind of escalated in takings, didn't they? It became more popular. As they went on till about part four or five, didn't they? And I think part three was maybe the highest grossing one. But the same with the video sales. Variety was boasting that Media, who put out a lot of tapes in the States, their biggest selling tape up to that point had been Nightmare on Elm Street, with something like 180,000 units. But the sequel topped it with selling over 200,000 units. So it really entered into the kind of pop culture kind of lexicon, I kind of guess, but at this point. I thought it was also quite interesting to sort of look at a contemporary review of the film, and Janet Maslin in New York Times, I'll just read this short paragraph. She says, like the geeks and goons and psychopaths that it celebrates, the horror genre seems capable of resuscitating itself over and over. Just when the form seemed exhausted, when it looked as though the last dead counsellor lay butchered on the cabin floor, along have come a couple of better-than-average bloodbaths, Reanimator, a grisly mad scientist movie with a villain who's quite literally a talking head, and now A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge. So it goes to show that even although it was critically trounced in a lot of areas, I think some critics, Maslin included at the time, realised the worth of the film. So I thought that was quite interesting. But that, apart from the stuff we've already said, is kind of what I've got. But Eric, I imagine you've got a bit more.
Okay, well, I'll just go through a few things, yeah. Its budget was about $2.3 million, grossed about $30 million. It opened in the US on the 1st of November 1985. It debuted at number four, surprisingly, behind Death Wish 3, To Live and Die in L.A., and Jagged Edge. It had an unusual shelf life for a film of this ilk, because it dropped out of the box office top 20 after 3 weeks, but then kept re-emerging sporadically into the top 20 well into the spring and summer of 1986. And for us over here in the UK and Ireland, we did not get the film until October of 1986. And this was typical of the time. I remember waiting a full year for Dream Master to come out from its US release to reach me in the southeast of Ireland. And similar things like with Hellraiser 2, Phantasm 2. I was waiting ages and ages. Thankfully, it's not that way anymore, particularly with the Baby Jesus. Not that I do that type of thing. Mark Eric. Patton. Mark Patton had auditioned for the first Nightmare on Elm Street. He was up for the... It was actually between him and Johnny Depp for the role of Glenn, and Johnny Depp got the role in the end, obviously. Some people that were mentioned as audition... What?
In the end.
He got it. Okay, fair enough. Oh, might as well just do this. Other people who auditioned for the role of Jesse in part two. Now, some of this I don't know how much of it to believe, because some of the actors would have been quite young. But Brad Pitt apparently auditioned for Jesse. Christian Slater did, but now he would have only been 15 at the time, so I don't know if that's true. And they say Matt Damon apparently auditioned, and he would have only been 15, so I don't know if that's true. The IMDb also says that Michael J. Fox was considered at one stage, but he was, he had Family Ties, Teen Wolf, and Back to the Future on the go at the time, so he had no time for Freddy's Revenge. Yes, David Chaskin, who is the script writer, as I said, he blamed Mark Patton for the sort of gay overtones or undertones to the film, but later admitted that they were intentional. But he went on to write the screenplay for a film called The Curse, which was directed by David Keith and starred Will Wheaton, which was an okay movie. What?
It's just Will Wheaton. Sorry.
Is this a Family Guy thing?
Yes, sorry.
Yes. And he also did the script for I, Madman, the Tibor Takacs movie that is actually really quite good. I was mentioning it maybe last year when it came.
Love that movie.
Yeah, great movie. This was Mark Patton's last screen role. He retired after this, as Justin said. He, was, of course, got sick of trying to be a closeted homosexual in Hollywood. He says in the Never Scream Again documentary, I think it's in the extras, that... people would be paid to go into gay bars and see if they could spot any celebrities and sell the stories then to the tabloids. So he said that there wasn't the type of lifestyle he was willing to partake in. So he retired from acting.
Now, he is actually in the new Tommy Faircloth movie, Family Possessions, Crinoline right. Head 2. Yeah, so he's back.
No way! From the director of Crinoline Head.
Yeah, Tommy Faircloth's new movie, Family Possessions. Mark Patton's got a role in that.
Oh, excellent.
Along with Felissa Rose as well.
Oh, I love her too. Wes Craven didn't want to direct this movie because he felt you should have a clear-cut hero and villain and not mix the two, which is what the bare bones of the script had done by having, Jesse, having Freddy inside Jesse on a regular basis. He also didn't like the more ludicrous elements like the exploding parakeets and stuff, so he went off to make the not-at-all-stupid or ludicrous Deadly Friend instead. Kim Myers... she hasn't much of a career. She appeared in Hellraiser Bloodline 10 years later, which was directed by Kevin Yeager, who did some of the special effects on Freddy's Revenge. And in a blink and you'll miss it role, you'll spot Lyman Ward, whose name probably doesn't ring a bell, but he plays Grady's father in Freddy's Revenge. But he was the title character's father in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which is because I always thought, God, that guy looks familiar. Maybe because I had him, I don't know. But no, I didn't have him.
Eric.
Clue Gulager. I mentioned earlier The Uninvited with the ridiculously awful demonic cat special effect. He's in The Uninvited. He was also in The Initiation and Return of the Living Dead, and his son, we all probably know this, John Gulager is his son, and he directed Feast and Piranha 3DD. I don't have much else really in background. As you say, Never Sleep Again is the definitive document of even though the Freddy's Revenge only gets about 20 minutes of airtime in that documentary, but still, it's pretty thorough. So that's all I have. Yeah.
Well, that was very fulsome, Eric. So thank you.
Thank you. One other thing. Does anyone know who King Cobra are? Because Grady has a poster of them on their bedroom walls. Are they a hair metal band, I assume, are they?
Technically, I'd say they were, yeah.
Mm. They didn't really make an impact over here, I don't think, because I don't recall hearing of them. Poor old Jesse only has one poster in his room. It's just a Simple Minds poster. Don't You Forget About Me.
Yes, yeah.
But he's only just moved in. He hasn't had time to unpack his posters. I'm sure there's...
Well, there'd be kind of Gloria Gaynor and...
Bob Hoskins, yeah. Gloria Gaynor and Judy Garland posters.
That might cement it, mightn't it? I'm just going to be able to... The other thing I've got from that, the Mark Patton's Jesse journals on the website, he's got them. He basically said that the Jesse's journals, he said, "This is my final answer to all of you who asked if I liked the ending. Was Jesse gay? Was Fred gay? Did you know? Are you gay? You screamed like a girl, Eric. Do you feel like you are part of the real Nightmare on Elm Street series? Jesse and Mark are homos. The answers are buried here in this journal." And he says, "Jesse's Lost Journal was conceived as my subtext writings while making the movie. I stayed true to the film until late in the game, then bear off in a new direction, bringing Jesse up to date and letting you see he is quite alive and doing just fine. I hope you enjoy the journals here on Static Mass. I love writing them." So Static Mass is obviously the website. So if you Google that, if you want to read those. So how about, Joseph, do you want to read out some of our feedback on the Facebook group?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
This is from Brandon Miller. He says, "What happened to the joke of the week?"
Oh, Eric. That's
true. Yeah, I've been lax in that in recent weeks. Just inspiration has run dry.
It's very hard coming up with non-jokes, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey! I've just realized what you said there.
Anyway, they may be back. I'm sure Eric will get some inspiration soon enough.
If I get rid of this man that's inside me.
God. I do not want to pronounce this guy's name, but I'll try. Georgie Ferens, I hope that's his name. It says, "Freddy's Revenge is a strange sequel. It sticks out like a sore finger blade from the rest of the series. It isn't as bad as the later sequels, and although New Nightmare is a better film, Freddy's design is much scarier here. The Nightmare bus ride that bookends the film haunted me as a child. A truly irrational sequence that is so surreal it actually feels like a dream. This movie always reminds me of Mario Brothers 2 for the Nintendo Entertainment System, in that they were both quick to cash in on the success of the first, yet have little connection to mythology that was set up before or came after. Can you all think of other horror sequels this jarring? A top three, perhaps?" That was from
Exorcist 2.
Yeah.
Blair Witch 2.
I have to think about that. That was from Georgie Ferens, I guess. You know. Tom Virtuoso says, "Technically, minus the exploding bird and somewhat difficult to like characters, it's not a bad installment. This version of Freddy is still the creepiest, and the bus intro scene is well done. The one thing it definitely lacks is showing Jesse's reflection in a window during the pool attack. Freddy showing up at the party only makes sense if it was actually Jesse on a killing spree. The dolphin sounds in the score were also an interesting touch." Let's see. Bob Hartshorn says, really hated this one on its original release, but repeat viewings have revealed the secrets and alluring quality within. Great intro and outro. An impressively rendered finale and Ace Latex splitting FX work are the icing on a cake filled to the brim with homoerotica. Kitty Fiddler sports tutors and the man of your dreams instigating the oddest antics to be found anywhere in the Freddy K canon. A strange entry in the series for sure, but a very interesting and underrated one at that. I'm a fan. Okay, David J. Gehrig says, always loved this one. Freddy is most sinister and aggro in this installment. I never picked up on the homosexual tones when I was a preteen and saw this. Ironically, I had a huge crush on Kim Myers back in the day. Now the gayness is impossible to ignore, and I love every minute of it. This is surely the most underrated of the sequels. I actually seem to go back to this one the most, maybe even more so than beyond the beloved Dream Warriors, which as a 12-year-old was maybe my most influential horror flick at the time. Okay, Nick Yeoman says, I remember binge watching the first few Nightmare films when I was younger, and this one just stuck out. It didn't seem to fit in with the others and just seemed odd. I really didn't get it. Now I can appreciate it in all of its camp glory. Jesse's bedroom dance alone is worth watching for. I look forward to your thoughts. Sure, Eric will love this one for the 80s fashion, of course.
Totally.
Yes, Eric.
Big hair pool party.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece of music we're going to be playing out on, which is totally 80s-tacular.
Oh, yeah. Brad Yasuda says, strange film. When I first saw it, I had no idea what in the almighty fuck was going on. I wondered why there was so much male nudity in a horror film. Being used to the female nudity prevalent in the genre, it just made me uneasy due to the tone. Now, after years of reflection and several subpar sequels like Friday the 13th Part 5, I find I like it now. We'll probably never see the likes of it again. Okay, that was from Brad Yasuda. Chris Thompson says, would you rate this one as the most disappointing follow-up to a modern horror classic, or is there one that screwed the pooch harder than it?
Well, it's kind of...
Yeah.
Well, we talked about saying that it's kind of, I think most people's opinion of this has changed, but I think also a film like the aforementioned Blair Witch 2 was kind of a very strange sequel, wasn't it?
Yeah, and met with much disdain, although I have liked that film.
Okay, I haven't seen it since I saw it at the cinema, actually, when it first came out, and so I'd be interested in watching it again at some point, but I just remember thinking, my God, what a pile of shit. So, but I mean, traditionally, sequels have always been seen as worse, haven't they? I mean, there's very few sequels that are regarded as better than the original, I imagine. I mean, some films, I mean, certainly with slasher films, I mean, if you look at the difference between Sleepaway Camp and Sleepaway Camp 2, then they're very different movies, aren't they? Very different tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, interesting. Okay.
Okay, Von Kolmeier, he says, it's love now for its message, but this film stinks in my book. There's a couple of cool kills, but the story is boring, and this film starts the downward spiral the rest of the series could never get out of.
Interesting. So even taking into account the beloved part 3 and 4,
yeah,
it's kind of, yeah. I mean, I've never been a massive Nightmare on Elm Street fan. I've always been, my heart belongs to Jason, bar the original, and I like the sequel, part 2, and I like 3 and 4, but post that I was not a fan. I have hardly watched part 5 or anything beyond that at all over the years, so I much prefer the kind of more run of the mill almost kind of thrills of the Friday 13th, the more kind of reality based as opposed to fantastical thrills of Nightmare on Elm Street films, as much as I can appreciate them.
I would agree with that, I guess. Let's see.
Well, back in the 80s, I was more Team Freddy, I'd say, but definitely 20, 30 years on, I'm Team Jason now, in retrospect. Yeah.
Dave Rendon says, my wife and I were lucky enough to see the original in the theaters back then, and I was excited yet apprehensive that the following sequels would be out in 2 years' time. As suspected, Craven's razor-gloved hand was missing for Freddy's Revenge, and it wasn't nearly as fun to see the follow-up. It was great to see it at a drive-in, though, and the opening bus scene still stands up as one of the horror's most interesting opening sequences. Okay, Aaron Black says, I saw this for the first time about a month ago. I really enjoyed it. Maybe not a great Nightmare on Elm Street sequel, but a fun slasher with a few genuinely cool and creepy ideas. Also, maybe the gayest movie I've ever seen. I wish I could have been at a crowded theater on opening night just to see the confused looks from the audience who went expecting a slasher sequel and instead got a film about a young man grappling with his sexuality. Okay, Ara Alishan says, he's inside me and he wants to take me again. Oh, matron. Finally, Larry Liu says, my favorite.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone, as ever, for feeding back. I think it works really well, doesn't it, on the doing it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Have we got any other feedback, Joseph?
You know what? Actually, I think we actually do have an email, and I forgot about that. Give me just a second.
Oh, Joseph.
Does anyone want to read it, or should I read it?
You read it, I think, for penance. But I'll tell you what, while you're looking for that, let's play How to Get in Contact with the Show. So if you want to send any more emails, and this is how to get in contact with us.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, Joseph, you got an email there for us?
Yes, this is from Jay Bullington. He says, hi, guys. I just had to write and let you all know how much I have enjoyed listening to your podcast. I only discovered you gentlemen a couple of weeks ago, so being 56 years old, and I think he's 1 year younger than Justin, I might just be your newest and oldest listener. I've managed to listen to most all of the show so far, and it's been great hearing and getting to know all of you, except Eric.
What?
Just kidding, Eric. He says, I can't thank you all enough for reminding me of some... of the greats that I had forgotten about, like House on Sorority Row. And more than once, your comments on a film have made me dig out my own copy on disc, most notably Pieces and The Prowler, and to see how much I agreed or disagreed with your thoughts. The real clincher, though, was when you talked about my absolute favorite giallo, Blood and Black Lace. So glad to know you all appreciate this garish masterpiece. And did we cover Blood and Black Lace? I don't remember that.
We did. No, we did.
Blood and Black Lace. I really honestly don't remember that, but okay.
We have.
Are you sure, Eric? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, was that with the Deep Red episode?
I think it was a double bill with something, yeah.
Okay.
Let me Google anyway, it and see.
Yeah. Anyway, while you're playing with your Google, Jay goes on to say, I also loved hearing you all talk about a recent favorite of mine, Nurse or Nurse 3D. My husband, not a horror fan, but he's come a long way over the years, and my friends and I loved watching this exploitation party movie. The lead actress spent so much time naked from the waist down that now we all call this dressing nurse style. I can't wait to hear what you all have to say about Visiting Hours, and that was our last episode, wasn't it? Yeah.
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 I remember seeing this for the first time back when it came out, and it still holds my attention after all these years. I think Lee Grant is pretty terrific in the movie. Okay. Despite some decided...
No, she is.
No, I don't agree there. Is. Yeah, you think the woman from Nightmare on Elm Street as the mother is great.
I didn't say she was great. I said she wasn't bad.
Well, no, she is bad.
I think Lee Grant should have got an actor for, got an Oscar for Visiting Hours compared to the woman from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, she should get an actor, all right.
Streets ahead of Elm Street lady.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, I think Lee Grant is pretty terrific in the movie, despite some decidedly unterrific screaming. Plus, I'm just a sucker for any slasher that takes place in a hospital. Cold Prey 2 is one of my favorites. Also, William Shatner, enough said. Thank you all for the laughs and the great ideas for more movies to watch. You can count on me to be a longtime listener. Your friend, Jay Bullington, a.k.a. Raving Bull.
Well, thank you, Raving Bull. Always good to know, and especially not being the oldest amongst the bunch anymore, so that's good. Well, thank you for writing, and anyone else wants to write in, please do, or we'll be announcing what we're going to be doing next, and so if you join our Facebook group, you can leave your thoughts there, or send us an email, or even a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you, so thank you very much. I just wanted to also mention another podcast, because I was interviewed for the Supporting Characters podcast, hosted by long-time listener Bill Ackerman. Which I talk about the podcast, talk about the behind the scenes, Eric's tantrums, all those kind of things, and the drug overdoses, the divorces and all that kind of thing. So if you want to hear about the background behind the show, and the inner tensions, seriously, it's just lots of good stuff about the podcast, and also where my love of horror movies and slasher movies in particular came from, and that's the Supporting Characters podcast, which you can find on the Now Showing Network. Now Playing Network, which again, search Supporting Characters on Facebook, you'll find that, so that's worth a listen. We're also going to be doing the next thing we're recording, actually, is we're going to be recording hopefully tomorrow, because we're working with a new sound setup, because my last one crapped out last week for no particular reason, so we're starting a new one, so hopefully this will be listenable. We're recording the what Joseph?
I was just saying we're recording that on my birthday.
On his birthday, yes, it's Joseph's birthday tomorrow. Yes. So many happy returns.
Yes.
Is it the big 4-0 or is it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, congratulations.
Hey, I can hear a toilet.
Yeah, someone's flushing. Is it a cat?
It's a cat. Yeah.
Was that you, Nathan?
He's on mute.
No, I'm still muted.
Who's flushing a toilet?
Who's flushing the toilet then?
It was someone upstairs.
Okay, all right.
God, that mic is good.
It's the iPad, baby.
Yeah. And so we're recording for Arrow Films' UK release of Satan's Blade. We're recording that tomorrow, so wish us luck. It's our first kind of group recording, isn't it, for Arrow? Although they did put out the Madman one that we did for Vinegar Syndrome was ported over to the UK release as well. So
was it 88 Films that did that, or was it Arrow?
It was Arrow that did Madman.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're releasing quite a few different slashers, hopefully in the future. So if all goes well, we should be doing some more for Arrow. So looking forward to that. But for next time, Joseph, you're going to choose something. What are you choosing for us to cover next time?
Well, we're still off of listener picks, so I thought it's about time to do a little bit of a controversial episode, but I don't think that I'll get much controversy out of you guys. We're going to cover It Follows.
Cool. Okay. Well, it's a film that I enjoy, so it'll be interesting to do a newer film. So, we'll be covering that next time. So look forward
to that. I still can't find the episode where we covered Blood and Black Lace, but we have covered it.
I don't think we have.
I think we have. I remember watching that for the podcast.
No, because it was on one of the listener picks, a double bill of that and something. I think Bird with a Crystal Plumage and Blood and Black Lace, I think.
But why was I watching? I was watching for the podcast. I remember watching it for the podcast.
You're back in Kansas now, Eric.
I have, but we've done it. I know we have.
We have.
Like a Twilight Zone episode.
Not in this reality.
Oh, I don't understand what's happening.
Eric's having a breakdown. It's like, is it Capricorn?
Actually, I think we have. I found it. It is. We did it on. I see it on Google. It says Blood and Black Lace, but I can't really seem to see a date on it.
It's like it's been erased from memory or something.
It's kind of like the moon landings, isn't it? Did it really happen, or was it? Was it faked?
Yeah.
So. Well, we'll clear up that little mystery next time. But thank you for listening. Eric, what are we playing out with?
Oh, we're playing out with The Wonderful Wish featuring Fonda Rae and Touch Me All Night Long. This is a film that would be familiar to us at this side of the Atlantic by a version done by Kathy Dennis in 1991, which had slightly different verses, but this is the original one. Okay. And it's awesome, and it makes me want to close drawers at my bottom.
Now, wait a minute. We covered Blood and Lace, but I don't think we covered Blood and
Black
Lace.
No, we have done. We have covered Blood and Black Lace. I know we have.
We haven't, Eric.
We have.
I've seen it on the listener picks, and we haven't covered it.
Why was I watching it so much then? I remember watching it several times during 1 week to try and study it for the podcast. I did.
I'll tell you what. I'll be able to tell you within 30 seconds whether we've covered it or not. Just 1 second.
I bet the people listening are on tenterhooks.
Because Eric's just going to die if he doesn't.
I am. I need to know.
Deep Red, blah, 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 blah.
While you're looking that up, I want to say one thing I liked about Freddy's Revenge that I forgot to mention is that Grady was grounded because he accidentally pushed his grandmother down the stairs. No, that's actually what he says in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, yeah. It's a nice little touch.
It's just odd.
Very odd.
Yeah.
But
Eric, Joseph, I have to say, I'm not seeing it in our episode list.
I'm still
scrolling, but I'm just not seeing it, and I'm getting way on up there.
No.
I mean, no, we have not covered Blood and Black Lace. We might have talked about it like vaguely, but I don't think we've actually made an episode about it. So no, we have not covered it.
But I remember watching it so many times and making notes and stuff. Who was I doing that for?
Yeah, exactly. Who were you doing that for?
No.
Aaron's been cheating on us.
I think he has. Do you reckon this is grounds for having Eric committed? Like one of those 80s slasher movies where they put people in a mental asylum?
Like curtains.
And leave them there?
I want curtains. To be Audra.
You are Audra, Inga.
Eric HR would like to speak with you.
No.
So, anyway.
You're just trying to drive me mad so you can claim my inheritance.
Well, that is true. All your Toya records.
Yeah, that's what you want.
So we can burn them. Yes. But anyway, well, thank you for listening to Hysteria Continues. We'll be back next time with It Follows. Say goodbye to the good people.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Wake up, little people.
Just be glad you were clothed this time, Eric.
Yes.
Video.
I know.
Well, we're glad you were clothed as well, Eric. So, anyway. Joseph.
Well, we've already seen it all anyway.
Oh, that's true. On the photocopier.
I have no idea. I just Googled photocopied arse and that came up, so.
Okay. Terrifying.
We can't hear the cat flushing the toilet.
I think it sounds like someone's trying to break in through Joseph's back door.
Yeah.
Hey. I'm back.
Someone's trying to get in the rear entrance.
Or I could do Blood and Black Lace.
Shag off. Little whore.
Oh, Eric. All right.
Tickle him. You're that far away from the Dublin line.